Kids Comics.
And here are your hosts, Michael and Andrew Leyland.
Hello, everybody.
Oh, hello, everyone.
And welcome back to Hey Kids Comics Today. Very much looking forward to this.
Is it called Hey Kids Comics Today? Because that sounds like some kind of like, that sounds like a news show. Because like, that's what we're breaking into
well,
now.
Well, Chris Morris should be delivering this in a deadpan way.
And welcome to Hey Kids Comics Today.
No, it's called Hey Kids Comics 2. We decided on the 2 being very important.
Did we? Because there's two of us, it works on multiple levels.
It's yes! Exactly. I'd never considered that. It's so good.
Media degree.
Yeah. No, today, if you remember at the end of last episode, I said we were covering Dragon Ball.
And we are.
And we are. But we are recording two episodes on the same day to give me a little bit of a backlog because we've not had a chance to get together and record.
We have to admit that. You could have we have a special interlude.
We have a special interlude for you, lovely listeners. We've got a special interlude.
And Hey Kids Extra.
A Hey Kids Today Extra.
Yes.
In which we're doing one of our State of the Union addresses.
Right.
I love these. Okay. I love when we do State of the Union addresses.
Okay. And what we're doing, Gorbachev.
Thank you very much. Is he dead now, Gorbachev?
Probably.
Yeah, he's dead now, isn't he? So we can say what we want. He's not going to sue. So today we're going to look at all the comics that we buy on a monthly basis from Ace Comics. We should mention them and tell them that they're in this show and see if they'll sponsor us. Or at least, I'll at least give me some free comics.
Everything I do is in the pursuit of free things.
Everything I do it for you. We're going to be number one for 17 weeks now. So, yeah, State of the Union address. We've got a bunch of comics here that we buy. This is our monthly pile. And we've decided, because this is a little bit more topical, we're going to release this one first and the Dragon Ball next. But as far as we're concerned, it is happening today. It's just not for you, so you're going to wait that little bit longer. But
it's worth it.
He said, having not recorded the Dragon Ball episode yet, it may be utter tripe.
It's going to be us.
It's going to be us.
It's going to be at least, at the very least, fine.
It's at the very least, it will be resolutely mediocre.
At the very least, it will be a podcast that will have been listened to.
Yeah, by us. So where do you want to begin? Do you want to begin with the news that broke this week that Dan DiDio turned down a DC Star Wars crossover by Kurt Busiek and Alex Ross?
Okay. Well, all I know about that is just what you sent me. I didn't go away and look into it.
It was posted on the Back Issue Facebook feed. Apparently, he'd done an interview.
Right.
And Alex Ross had done preliminary artwork, which we've seen all over the place.
Yeah.
But I just assumed it was Alex Ross being Alex Ross.
Just having some fun with
it. Yeah, just having a bit of fun with his artwork and stuff. I didn't know it was pre-production art to sell Lucasfilm on the idea of a DC Comics Star Wars crossover.
Right, okay.
Which apparently it did. And all the quote from Dan DiDio said the writer had already brokered the deal. So I interpreted that as Kurt Busiek had a yes from Lucasfilm to go ahead with this project because he was the writer. Alex Ross would have been the artist. And all he needed to get the go-ahead was Dan DiDio. And I am presuming here, I don't wish to put words in Kurt Busiek's mouth, but I'm presuming here that when Kurt Busiek walks to you with a project that has essentially been greenlit, or at the very least is on the amber from Lucasfilm, with Alex Ross attached, I presume he was walking into DC's office going, "We're in the money, we're in the money." And then he hit that giant roadblock
that
was Dan DiDio. Who said, "No, this makes no sense." I'm just going to pause for a second there. He's right.
Yeah.
It does make no sense. It's a brick dumb idea. Yeah. It's as dumb as the Star Trek Enterprise crew meeting the X-Men and the Enterprise D crew also meeting the X-Men, but in different mediums. That happened.
Okay.
The original Star Trek crew, when Marvel had the rights to Star Trek comics, met the X-Men in comics.
Right.
And then they did a novel where the X-Men met the Next Generation crew.
Okay, right.
So obviously the original shoot were cartoons. So,
whatever.
So that happened, and it was brick dumb then.
Yeah.
But it was worth it for the gag where somebody said Dr. McCoy and the Beast and Dr. McCoy both said yes.
Okay.
It was worth it for that gag.
Right.
So on the one hand, I'm kind of with DiDio that it's brick dumb.
Yeah.
On the other, I can't help but think of, you know, that Warner Brothers cartoon where the cat goes with dollar signs at the end of his eyes. To me, it would have been, yes, this is a brick dumb idea.
But
will
it sell?
Yes. And you can't help but think, well, okay, Kurt Busiek's not crap.
Mm.
Alex Ross ain't a newbie.
Yeah.
At the very least, it would have been interesting. It may have been car crash interesting, but it would have been interesting.
And again, at the very least, it would have sold.
Yes, and it would have sold.
If you're running a business, you want money.
That is ultimately my issue. That he's running a business. I have nothing personally against Dan DiDio, but I do want to point out that under Dan DiDio's reign as EIC of DC, I pretty much went from the amount of DC comics I was reading to zero, apart from the occasional special project here and there. And I kind of don't think I'm alone. And I also am not taken away from the people who enjoyed that era, but I don't think enough people came back to justify the people that he lost. I don't think it balanced out in the sales figures. So to actually have a project that was pretty much a done deal, if his quote is to be taken at face value.
The hard work's been done at that point.
If Kurt Busiek has gone to Dark Horse, and Dark Horse Comics have said, we're in, and he's gone to Lucasfilm with Alex Ross R, and Lucasfilm have said, we're in, to have Dan DiDio go, nah, this makes no sense. You're like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, do you not like money, Dan? Yeah. So that was, and the art was nice. So that was quite pretty. In other news, you've been reading Lee and Ditko's Spider-Man.
I have.
Haven't you?
For the first time.
It's the first time you've read it chronologically. You've read some of it before, right? Because we've covered Ditko's Spider-Man on the show before.
I don't know. I mean, maybe. Not that I remember. I know I've read a fair bit of Romita, but I don't think I'd ever knowingly read any Ditko. So even if we had, it was only like the one issue.
Yeah, we covered issue 33 on the show.
So this has been very much reading it for the first time for me.
And being able to see its growth.
And yeah, I was reading it as a soap as well in its entirety rather than just dipping into the odd issue.
So do you see what I mean when I say Spider-Man was 90210 meets The Wire?
Yeah. It didn't start that way. I think about halfway through the run is when it really gets running.
Although the more for you, it would be Gossip Girl meets The Wire, wouldn't it?
It's not quite Gossip Girl.
It's not quite Gossip. Peter's not quite as unlikable as the characters in Gossip Girl.
I mean, it's a bizarre twist of events where Flash Thompson is more likable than Peter Parker.
Often, yes.
Say what you will.
I've made that point in Amazing Spider-Man from the very beginning, another podcast you should listen to. Flash is... Yeah. Flash is true to himself.
Yeah.
Flash is who he is. He's completely unreconstructed.
Yeah.
But he knows who he is. He knows what he wants. And he's quite happy to just be that.
Yeah.
He's got no desire to be anything else.
Yeah.
Whereas Peter's often a dick.
And there's often times, it's very, very funny, because I don't know if this amount of thought was actually put into it. The amount of times he talks to everyone else in his school, it's like, oh, she's a good kid. Oh, they're just a bunch of kids. Like, they're the same age as you.
Yeah, but I always get the feeling he feels a little bit more mature than they are because of everything he's gone through.
See, for me, it's the opposite. I think he believes he's above them.
Oh, well, there is that.
Yeah.
I think that's very definitely part of it. But if you also think about it as well, he's dating an older woman.
Yeah.
And he's gone through a lot of shit that the other people their age may not have gone through.
Yeah.
Although he doesn't know that because he doesn't take the time to get to know anyone.
No. I mean, he's just started college at this point as well, and he's just absolutely ignoring it. Everyone liked him. And then, I mean, yeah, he's wrapped up with Aunt May, who, God, I wish would just...
Can she die now?
Leave the book.
I love Aunt May. I think Aunt May's fine.
But yeah, it's like everyone wants to be nice to him and wants to be friends with him, and he's just blanking them all.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, you're kind of perpetuating it a bit here, Peter.
Yeah, well, that goes away when Romita comes in.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to you.
But it's been quite interesting as well, because I think the weakest issues so far have been the more kind of like, you know, iconic ones, like the first appearance of villains, because they're all very much by the number formula. Like, the best issue is when the villains come back. I think it's when the Vulture comes back, when it's like, oh, we actually have a story here. There's actual plots and subplots. So that's been what it's at its best.
The two-part one where Dr. Octopus come back.
Yeah.
Where Betty's brother is involved
in
he's been conned into being a lawyer for the mob.
Yeah.
Because he's up to his neck in debt, is my all-time favourite issue.
And then you've got some neat little bits as well, where it's just like, it feels like an actual title rather than just kind of individuals like it is at the start. So like, there's one bit where there's a throwaway line of dialogue about some recent cat burglaries, and then an issue down the line is about the cat burglar, and it's like, oh, these guys knew what they were doing.
Yeah, Ditko was pretty good at this plotting work. Stan wasn't always listening to him.
Yeah.
Well, Ditko knew what he was doing. So, well.
But it's just been a lot of fun. I've been having more fun with it than I thought. I mean, it's. Some of it's. Maybe. It's probably quite controversial to say, but it feels more dated now, I think.
It is 60 years old.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of that really stems mostly from Stan Lee, more so than anything.
Stan's references are already 20 years too old.
It's not even that. I think it's more a case of just the narrative style. You know, so, for example, on the polar opposite end of the storytelling spectrum is going back and reading Ultimate Spider-Man from the start.
Which I bought it for your birthday.
You did.
Were you expecting that? That nice little omnibus.
It wasn't that I was expecting it. It was the one thing that I asked for.
Well, you asked for the JMS one as well.
I did.
But I got an exceptionally good deal on Ultimate Spider-Man Volume 1 Omnibus.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I was kind of hoping I'd get it as well because I'd already planned to read that while we were away. So if you didn't get it, I probably would have bought it myself.
Right. But, not for as cheap as I found
probably
it.
Probably not. But, so that's, again, that's the polar opposite end of the spectrum. That's the kind of modern way of storytelling. And people have got issues with that. Fair play.
Well, I like what Koo said.
Right.
When he was flicking through it, that the art and colouring is now so early 2000s.
But the contrast between the two when the artist is allowed to breathe and tell the story and you do it visually.
Yeah, there's still a feeling that every issue of Ditko's Spider-Man stands on its own.
Yeah.
Even if it continues into the next issue.
But the way the narrative is told in more a case of the writer's input, Bendis allows Bagley to tell the story. And were compared to Stan Lee wanting to be a part of the story so much that we might have mentioned last time we were talking about it, when even fight scenes, where it's just fighting, every single panel has at least two text balloons. And it starts, the pace slogs sometimes because it's like Lee wants to be just as involved as Ditko is. So everyone has to talk all the time. And it's just one of those things that, I guess the problem with reading it in the omnibus as well is you're reading the issues back to back in more rapid succession. So it's like, and with them standing on their own as well, you know, it's like, it just feels very slow at times. Like, it's just...
No, I kind of get that because obviously it was never written with the intention of being presented in that way. And when they did present it in that way, like in Treasury reprints and the little paperback books and everything, they would sometimes cut bits out to make it flow better.
Yeah, well, that's all it is. I just don't think it flows that well now than maybe it would have done monthly off the shelves.
Even the three-part master planner.
Well, I think that's... Well, even still, that's the same.
Yeah.
I think more and more towards the end of his run, and unfortunately it was more and more to the end of the run, you start seeing Ditko play around with panel layouts a bit more. But it's still ultimately, it's still Lee wanting to just be in it more and more. And don't, you know, he was still 50% of the partnership, but he wanted you to know that he was 50% of the partnership, so everyone has to talk all the time.
Yeah.
It's just that kind of hinders it a bit at times.
Sometimes he's not willing to let the art just... do the storytelling.
Exactly. But to counter that, it's because the omnibus is the Marvel Masterworks, isn't it?
Yes.
Compiled. So they include the intros that Lee did for the Masterworks. And what was really quite nice is obviously there's a lot and a lot of behind the scenes stories about Lee and everyone else at Marvel. But what was really quite nice is in black and white, on text on paper, Stan Lee is nothing but favourable to Steve Ditko, and more so in the intro for what would be the last Marvel Masterworks, is he basically says, I don't even remember writing these. I don't think I cared about writing them when I was writing them, but Ditko's storytelling makes it feel fresh and modern. I can see like how much work he's doing. He was singing Ditko's praises, and it's like kind of refreshing because you just hear a lot of stories where he's...
That new book, Stan Lee Lied.
Yeah.
Which is just purely about all the stuff he wrote in Origins of Marvel Comics, where essentially he's taking credit for everything.
Yeah.
And you can look at that and go, yes, that wasn't right. But I honestly, this is why I can't hate Stan in the same way I think Bob Kane was a pissant.
Right.
Is that I think later on in his life, Stan either learned that these people contributed just as much as I did, so let's give them the credit, or he listened to what people were saying to him about bigging himself up.
Right.
And he, again, learned from that.
Yeah.
So either way, there's an element of self-awareness there.
Yeah.
But even going as far back as his interviews in the 70s, he was mentioning his artists.
Yeah.
So it is hard, it is difficult, and at this point nobody knows who did what, and because a lot of what Kirby says has been questioned, and Ditko never said enough to be questioned.
Yeah.
He just kind of kept himself to himself and said, well, the work speaks for itself. The work's there. If you want to like the work, fine. Whatever. So, yeah, well, I'm glad you're enjoying them, and I'm glad Ultimate Spider-Man holds up for you.
Ultimate Spider-Man so far, the thing with Ultimate Spider-Man is, I think I mentioned to you, it's my favourite iteration or reimagining of Spider-Man.
Mm.
I think it perfectly works as a modern-day reimagining. Everything with Spider-Man and Peter Parker and that cast of characters is great, and it's really, really good, and I really, really like it. The villains don't work, though.
Yeah.
Because the villains... They work, they always work. They might be a bit silly, but they're no more silly than someone being bitten by a radioactive Spider-Man and putting on a spandex costume. You just got to buy into it. You've just got to accept it. I don't think the turning Norman Osborn into an actual goblin was that great. They just feel more one-dimensional than they already did. So it's been kind of hit and miss at the moment. But
The thing with Ultimate Spider-Man as well is it can't lean into that mystery.
Yeah.
That we all now know Norman Osborn is the Goblin.
Yeah.
The original readers didn't know that.
That's because Norman Osborn still doesn't exist where I'm up to.
There is that. Yeah, that's true. All right, let's crack on. Let's do an email before we get into the meat of the episode. Matt Prathers emailed in. Hello, Matt. Hey, Michael and Andrew. Love the Kirby DC stuff. Good, we love doing it. His imagination was released in his work and I ate it up. I used to wonder what future projects would follow if he had garnered the financial success and critical praise he had hoped for. It's great to see what a creative can do when afforded the space to make something. 2001 and Kirby sounds like a great fit. I've only read The Treasury and never pursued any of the regular series, so I know not of which I write. Eternals is something I've always wanted to return to. I have the odd issue or two, but haven't tracked any more down. If I live long enough, I will get back to it. Thank you, Matt Prather. Yeah, I don't think I'm bothered about going to the Eternals.
No.
To be honest with you. I don't think I'm interested in seeing any more of it. But thank you for your email, and thank you for listening. Oh, Steve Gibbons sent us coffee money.
Oh, lovely.
It was such a long time ago from when we last recorded to this.
Right, okay.
I haven't mentioned him. So thank you, Steve. I've already bought it,
Oh, thank you.
So there you go. I bought you a round, dude.
Right. Are you okay? Right.
So I've already bought it, So you've had that. But anyway, thank you very much.
Lovely. You mentioned that after the fact. Yeah.
Well, I completely forgot. I wasn't being nice.
Someone else was.
Like I say, Steve did it just after Dan did it.
Right.
But we mentioned Dan about two episodes ago.
Okay.
But we've not actually been able to get together to record. Right. So I'd completely forgot to mention Steve. And I don't want to forget to mention people who are very kind enough to donate to the coffee jar.
Yes.
And if you want to buy us a coffee, Christmas is coming up. Wink. The instructions for how to do so are in the tag at the end. But it was very much appreciated. And Michael very much enjoyed the beer I bought him, even though he didn't know it was with Steve's money.
Which beer did you buy me?
I bought a round when we came and visited you. After Cassie passed away. Yes, I did.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I bought it for everybody.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But yours was Steve's money.
I say how it is now.
the money just appears.
You'll happily spend someone else's money.
I will. Always. Yeah. Anyway, first up, I buy my favourite of the current comics that I buy, undeniably.
Yeah.
And you can make a case that this says something profound about the modern comic book industry. That the first comic I read whenever Ace Comics' stash comes through the letterbox is the facsimile edition of Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Well, funny you should say that, actually, because on the top of my pile here, right, the facsimile edition of Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah. Why? There are some people who are against facsimiles.
Okay.
I don't understand it. But there are some people against it.
Against or just don't care?
Against. Stop doing them.
Oh, right, okay.
Right, my theory on that is this. I love this because I did not get to read this monthly as a kid.
Yeah.
DC Comics, although having a very large newsstand presence, we've discussed this before, miniseries, annuals, specials did not tend to get onto the newsstands.
Your one-offs kind of thing.
So Crisis did not get onto the newsstands in my area.
Right.
Now, whether it did in other places, I don't know, but I never saw this on the regular newsagent stands in this country.
Okay.
So the first time I read Crisis was the trade paperback. And it's a different experience.
Mm.
It's still good, and you can still appreciate it. But the facsimile is giving me that I didn't have as a child, to read it monthly.
Yeah.
And just immerse yourself in it. Every issue is 27 pages.
Yeah.
So it's not a short read. It's arguably Marv Wolfman's finest hour, in that how he's managed to bring every single character in the DC universe into this without it ever feeling forced or shoehorned.
Mm.
How he's done it is masterful. But Perez's artwork is a career high.
Yeah.
It's aided and abetted beautifully by Jerry Ordway's inks, which complements Perez perfectly, whilst I still think doing a lot of the heavy lifting.
Mm.
I think Ordway's doing a lot more here than just inker. I think there are pages where he's literally working to Perez's layouts,
yeah,
rather than specifically pencils. But either way, both of them do an absolutely stellar job in it. But just being able to get it as the facsimile as well means you get all the adverts for stuff like the misguided Jonah Hex series where he ends up in the future.
Oh, God, instead of in the Wild West.
But you get the letters pages.
Yes.
And it's fascinating to read them as people reacting to this as it was unfolding.
Well, what I really enjoyed, I think it's the first couple of issues when it's Marv Wolfman discussing how and why it came about. And that's kind of context is missing from some of the trades and collected edition versions.
But even if they include all of that,
yeah,
and I've got the absolute version of it, signed by George Perez, hurrah, does include all of that. But there's just something about having it as a monthly.
Yeah, it recontextualizes how you read it
yeah.
and how you interact with it.
Because these people in these letters pages are reacting to it in real time.
Yeah.
We know now this kills off The Flash.
Yeah.
This kills off Supergirl. They don't know that. So it's going to be fun to read those letters.
The letters, yeah.
As you get past that, and how did the audience of the time react to it?
Yeah.
Because that's always fun. Dick Giordano's Meanwhile column was always a good read. And it was interesting as well how many of these books you look. DC Comics Presents this month was the Alan Moore Swamp Thing one.
Right.
Arguably my... Well, it's not arguable. It is my favourite Swamp Thing story. Superman story that Alan Moore did.
Okay.
I think it's really, really fun. You've got Crisis on Infinite Earth 6. V was out. There's Tales of the Teen Titans. There's just quite a lot of interesting books that DC were doing at the time. So that is always the first thing I read when I buy my comics. You've got that one as well. Do you have anything different to say about it?
I don't think so. It is, yeah. It's like, I never cared about the facsimiles because ultimately I just didn't really see the point of them.
Mm.
There was always the argument of it's not as if you can't buy Crisis.
Yeah.
But I think what kind of made me like them a bit more and more is when you got Treasury Edition facsimiles. You can't buy those.
Mm-mm.
When you get, say, I read Gotham by Gaslight for the first time in its facsimile format, and it was considerably cheaper than just buying it as one of the hardbacks, however it's available now. And I think that's ultimately the single best thing about these facsimiles is, yes, they are the snapshot as how they were presented at the time, but also they're the cheapest way to do it.
Mm.
And it's why I'm so ardently against the people who will still slab these.
Yes,
I mean, I hate...
Don't even get me started.
I hate slabbers. The only people worse than people who slab comics are ticket touts and landlords. And
I love your hierarchy.
But it's to me, that betrays the reason for doing it. Yeah. You know, you can't have a snapshot as to what comics were like in 1985 for so cheap. You can't read the prestige version of Gotham by Gaslight for so cheap.
Mm.
You know, that is the whole point of them, to have a big oversized treasury edition for so cheap.
Yeah.
It's the best thing about them. And so that's kind of what ultimately made me come round to them. Now, they can be a bit hit and miss. We'll probably get to say it later on with some of the other facsimile bits, but they mostly seem to be important landmark issues.
Yeah.
You know, it's... They're doing Crisis. It's the anniversary of the symbiote suit. Before Crisis, they did the Flash of Two Worlds.
Yeah.
But then you get other ones where it's like, oh, this is a character's first appearance who will facsimile. Doesn't mean it's good.
Yeah.
War comics.
And the first appearance of Gambit.
Yeah.
Which they did to tie in with the Wolverine Deadpool movie. See, I'm the same as you. I was originally, what's the point of these?
Yeah.
And then when we were on holiday in Florida, me and Mike Bailey were just doing a tour of comic shops.
Right.
And the facsimiles were there. And I was like, oh, God.
Yeah.
And I suddenly, it clicked.
Right.
I will never buy Incredible Hulk number one.
Yeah.
I can't afford it.
Yeah.
but I can buy this, which is as near as damn it, Incredible Hulk number one.
Yeah.
And I can have Amazing Spider-Man number one and X-Men number one and,
yeah.
and so on and so on. And I can buy that as it was originally presented.
Yeah.
In a not expensive format. Yeah. Until there is a facsimile of Amazing Spider-Man, Fantasy 15, sorry, that I did not buy.
Okay.
That is currently slabbed.
Right.
£200.
And
I just want to take those people outside and rip the slab open in front of them and go, it's a reprint!
Yeah.
But that's just me.
And it's not like you can even... Well, the DC don't do it, do they? They have the barcode on the back.
Yeah.
But even still, it's like, how can you... What is the point? And that's ultimately the thing. I just don't understand the point. You know, it's... I don't understand why you can make the conscious decision to...
Yeah, the retailers should be using these to get people in. Even and you can argue $4 is a bit expensive for it. It's modern pricing. Maybe this is up for $2.50.
But even still, it's, you know, this is how much comics cost now, whether you like it or not. But at least with something like this, you're actually getting meat rather than a very...
And that's another thing as well. It shows you. Like Crisis, like we've said, that's a meaty read for your $4.
Yeah.
Certainly meatier than a lot of modern comics you'll buy. And an awful lot of mine to start off with are facsimiles. My next one is Detective Comics 400.
Yeah.
Which these are worth getting because they're not the recoloured versions.
Right, okay.
And a lot of people have kicked off about the recolouring of the Neil Adams reprints, haven't they? They don't like the omnibus or the collected edition hardcovers that people did because they've been recoloured. Honestly, the recoloring doesn't bother me. I did a comparison because I've got the Neil Adams omnibus.
Right.
And I did a comparison. In a lot of cases, the recolouring is better.
Okay.
Because it's the old colouring that lets it down. That being said, this paper that this is printed on.
Yes. Yeah.
Is gorgeous. It's not glossy or anything like that. It feels like not newsprint, but there's a roughness to it.
Yeah.
So it feels like paper.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Because oftentimes when you get your reprints, even if the colour's still the same, the paper, the glossy paper can ruin it.
Like, we'll go into that in a minute when I get to Marvel's facsimiles. I mean, there was a couple of story issues about this. Did you not get this one?
I don't think you ever read the Man Bit.
Right, there's a brilliant bit where these...
The Man Bit.
Man Bat, sorry. You know how Man Bat came along?
Go on.
Copyright.
Right.
Neil Adams basically went to DC and said, you know, at some point, Marvel are just going to do a Man Bat. And you can't stop them. So we need to do it first.
Right.
For exactly the same reasons that She-Hulk happened.
Right.
Because they'd already done the Bionic Woman on TV. And the creator of Cyborg, the book that inspired the $6 million man, owns none of that, doesn't get a penny for it.
Right.
Somebody, Stan Lee, I think, went to Marvel and said, look, if they do the same with the Hulk, they've got a character that we don't own.
Right.
So She-Hulk came from that. And Spider-Woman and all of that. A lot of it is just copyright protection.
Okay.
And it's the same with this. But there's a bit in this where the guys are sneaking around with the goggles on and they're talking about how we're moving really silently and these goggles mean we can see in pitch blackness. And I'm thinking, yeah, but Batman could probably just hear you talking to yourself. That's kind
we
of...
We are so silent.
Yeah, listen, we're so silent. Nobody could pick us up. Nobody can hear us commit this crime and Batman's just sat there going, dude. But later on as well, Batman spends two pages developing this device so he can hear them move in the darkness, essentially creating a bat sonar for himself to mirror Man-Bat. I get what they were doing with it. But from a story point of view, I'm like, would it not have been easy to just take a torch with you?
Yeah.
And just turn it on. No, there you are. Pow. That would have been much easier. But this is a lovely facsimile. Spoiled only by the Batgirl story, which is Gil Kane inked by Vinnie Coletta.
Right.
Now, Gil Kane was one of the finest artists of this era. Vinnie Coletta makes it look a little bit boring. But other than that, that was a lovely facsimile. Like you say, you look at the cover, ignore the price, and that could be the point of a facsimile, because, you, as you say, barcode goes on the back.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same, but again, this is the last of my facsimiles.
Oh, I've got three more.
This month, I also got the Superman versus Muhammad Ali one.
I've got that. It's over on the bookshelf.
Was just a little bit too big for me to bring on the train.
Oh, but it's so good, isn't it?
I've not read it yet.
Have you not?
I'm not. It's one of those where...
I want to put it on the list for next year.
Okay, right.
I want to talk about that next year. So we won't overly talk about it now, but yeah, one of my favourite facsimiles.
It's just one of those I've not had the time to read. We got back from holiday the other day, and I've just not read a lot of my books. I mean, I've been playing a lot of Gran Turismo more so than anything else. But it's one of those where, just like the Ra's al Ghul Treasure Edition, it's one of those that I just want to put aside a couple of hours, have a brew, sit down and read it.
And just immerse yourself in
it.
Because the art is gorgeous.
And it's the best thing about those treasuries.
Yeah.
You just get lost in it.
And it was worth buying because I've got the hardcover.
Yes.
From the last time it was reprinted.
The standard size one.
Yeah. But that's recoloured.
Right.
That's got new colouring in it.
Yeah.
But it's worth keeping both of them because there's like lots of text pieces in the hardcover.
Yeah.
Whereas the facsimile just presents it as it was presented.
It was also good as well just for the cover. And it's arguably the most iconic thing about it is the cover. Mm. And on the inside of it, it has a little who's who diagram. But also with it being its oversized format, you can actually see it much better as well. It's not just, you know, looking up closely to a book. It's actually there in front of you.
Well, there's an awful lot of them as well. You only know half of them, huh? Because a lot of them are TV stars of the day. Like Ron Howard's on there next to Henry Winkler for Happy Days.
Yeah.
Henry Winkler didn't give his rights permission.
Right, okay.
So all Neil Adams did was draw a moustache on him. But I'm looking at it going, that's Henry Winkler.
Yeah. Well, there's a few, like, I think the Jackson 5 are on there, I think Cher's on there, like, there's some of them that are a bit more obvious. The only ones that I didn't really know were the DC editorial staff, because I don't know what they look like.
I knew Julia Schwartz and Jeanette Kahn.
Right, okay.
And that's pretty much it. I wouldn't have known anyone else.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's so gorgeous, that facsimile. I'm almost considering buying the Superman Wonder Woman one, because I've only got that as the hardcover, though I genuinely dislike that story.
I don't think that's been solicited yet.
No.
Or on my order list, but I don't think it's out yet, is the Batman Villains one.
Yeah, I've ordered that.
And then, what else are we getting? We're getting the Halloween one, but that's not a treasury, is it?
No.
That's just regular size.
That's just the next treasury that's been mentioned but not solicited yet is Superman Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how many of these DC do. Because I reckon they'll do Superman Shazam.
Right.
Because then that'll be all of the big... created specifically for Treasury Edition ones. Yeah. Everything else was pretty much a reprint.
I'm kind of surprised that they've not done Superman Spider-Man. Because the rights of Batman,
I
they've
was
just done
gonna
the omnibuses.
Say, it would have been the perfect time for them. Yeah, still slap it in the omnibus. People are going to buy that.
Yeah.
But give us both Superman Spider-Man, Hulk Batman as Treasury reprints. But you know what they should do?
Right.
X-Men Teen Titans as a Treasury.
Right.
Because that was never done as a Treasury originally.
Right.
And complete that foursome properly.
Yeah.
If they do that, I would take back everything I have ever said negative about DC Comics.
Okay.
And I would bow before them, because that deserves to be a Treasury Edition. Walt Simonson's art for that is gorgeous.
Right.
And that would be fantastic. So, obviously, I'm reading the Secret Wars facsimiles.
Yeah.
I don't even like Secret Wars.
But a little facsimile cook boy.
Yeah, but because again, it's the joy of reading it monthly. It does not compare in any way to Crisis.
Which is bizarre that they're both coming out at the same time. You have a direct comparison.
Yeah, it's kid stuff compared to Crisis.
Yeah.
Absolutely, positively. But it was written for 12-year-olds. It's to promote toys.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the point of Secret Wars, so it succeeds at what it's doing. The problem I have with this is that I don't think Marvel's facsimiles are as good. For one, the paper's that glossy crap.
Yeah.
So it doesn't feel like it would have done. There's more weight to it, for a start.
Yeah.
Two, they put the barcode on the front and the little Marvel logo.
Yeah.
Now, on the one hand, you could say, well, that's clearly making it a facsimile edition. Okay, fine. But I think they should do what DC does.
Mm.
To me, the facsimile should be as near as, damn it, what the original printing was.
Yeah.
Thirdly, some of the reproductions of the ads really just look like they've been scanned off the original comic, don't they?
Yeah.
That Montezuma's Revenge Parker Brothers game advert for the Atari, it looks fuzzy.
Well, I think... Do Marvel have more adverts or something? Because I know I picked up the Godzilla issue 1 facsimile.
That was the 70s one. There was only 17 pages of story.
Because I was going to say, it's about twice the size. Mm. It's very thick, but there's barely any story. It's mostly ads.
At the time that Marvel were going through a bit of a slump, they took on more adverts.
Right.
So stories were cut to 17 pages.
Okay.
So that's why. But yeah, I mean, this is one of the better installments where, you know, they finally make the decision to go up against Galactus instead of sitting there and doing nothing. But it's weak sauce compared to Crisis, which is not to say I'm not enjoying reading it. I am. But
see, I don't think I'm getting I don't think I get any Marvel facsimiles. I got Godzilla simply just because, you know, it's Godzilla.
Yeah.
But even then, that's only an advert for the omnibus. But whatever, you know, I'll take it.
Mm.
But it's just they don't seem to be doing... I don't know if it's just me being biased or if they're just not doing any facsimiles of anything interesting. I was going to get...
They're doing all the Amazing Spider-Man that correspond with Secret Wars.
Well, I was going to get all the symbiote Spider-Man stuff, but A, they're not doing all of it. Like you mentioned, it's not a story. It's just a snapshot of an era. And then it's all in the omnibus anyway. So yeah. It's kind of...
But the omnibus has got a printing error.
Oh, has it?
Yeah. Okay. And that's been reported widely. It's not just a one-off.
Right.
So it's like, I'm a bit iffy about even getting that omnibus now.
Yeah.
And also I'm like, you know what I'm like. I want Amazing Spider-Man in omnibus format. Yeah, and that's it. I don't care about anything else. I don't care that you put the piece... Because it doesn't link.
Right.
It's literally the black costume saga. Well, he's wearing his black costume in this story.
Yeah.
But it's not a continuous narrative.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no need for you to have that issue of Marvel team up here.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. But the thing I don't understand as well is they have solicited a facsimile collection. So you're buying a collection, a graphic novel, Secret Wars, and the Spider-Man stuff.
Okay.
With the adverts. Now that's a boat that's left me on the island.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm baffled by that.
Because it's not a facsimile, because that's not...
Yeah.
It wasn't like that.
Yeah. That's, yeah. And are you going to have the same advert multiple times then? Because there are. That Montezuma's Revenge Parker Brothers one's on the back of loads of Marvel comics.
So if they did that with Crisis, you'd get that little funny alien with these Reese's pieces. So it how many times?
Makes no sense to me that.
Yeah.
And it also defeats the point of a facsimile comic. That you could buy the original comic as it originally came out.
And then it also defeats the point of what the collected edition is as well. Like, fundamentally betrays everything.
Yeah, it's dumber than dirt. But they clearly think there's an audience for it.
Maybe.
I mean, they've not come out yet.
Right.
So I guess we'll see how they sell. But facsimiles must be selling because they seem to be doing more of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And does that not say something about the current comics industry?
Yeah. I mean,
in a way,
someone really should turn around and go, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. But they're probably too distracted by the fact that these are selling anyway.
Yeah, and they're making money.
So, yeah, I mean, the next one that I've got is the DC House of Secrets one.
I bought this one.
And just again, because it's, you know, I like Swamp Thing and, you know, DC, I don't think DC do horror stuff like this anymore, or even Marvel.
No, you know, you don't there's see no anything. House of Secrets title anymore.
There's no House of Secrets, there's no Tomb of Dracula, there's no nothing like that. And it's just kind of nice to, again, it's that snapshot. You've got...
There seems to be, for all the banging on about diversity nowadays, there was more diversity of choice of stories in the 70s than there are today.
And it's even, you know, this little Halloween comic, essentially, is just, it's like a fun little Twilight Zone thing.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Again, you don't see stuff like that anymore, so it's kind of...
Bernie Wrightson cover's gorgeous as well.
It is. So again, if you're looking at this stuff and saying, oh, well, these facsimiles are selling, maybe look at why.
Yeah, why are the facsimiles selling?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also the variation of what... As a company, they know what they're turning into facsimiles.
Yep.
So take a look at that as well. Why are you choosing to reprint this?
Yeah. All right, well, before we get to the new stuff, you've run out of facsimiles now, haven't you?
I have.
So I've got two more, so we'll blitz through them quickly. We'll do another email and then we'll crack on. I got Uncanny X-Men issue 274. By pure coincidence, at the Comic Mart last week, I picked up Uncanny X-Men 275 in the 50p bin.
Okay.
Just not a facsimile, it was in the 50p bin.
Right, okay.
I don't know, it was something like buy four for something.
Yeah.
And I'd pulled upon Mark Waid's World's Finest. They had like the first 19 issues in the cheap bin.
Right, okay.
And I bought the first six, do you remember? And then stopped buying it for no other reason than money.
Yeah, yeah.
So I picked up from 6 to 19. And then 6 to 19 wasn't an even number or something. So I picked up a couple of others that he had in the box. And one of them was Uncanny X-Men 275. So I've inadvertently got two issues back to back here. Again, it's a Marvel one, so it's a bit glossy. It is a massive contrast to Secret Wars, though.
Mm.
In that this is Claremont at his most verbose. Look at that.
Yeah.
Look at that two-page splash there. Very introspective. It's a Magneto story. So it's all about the villain. And you spend a lot of time in Magneto's head, despite some delightful Jim Lee cheesecake artwork.
Of course.
Of Rogue just in the background posing.
Savage Land Rogue as well.
Yeah, with all of her clothes ripped off. Yeah. So that's nice, I guess. There's some nice Claremontisms, no quarter taken, none given, appears in this issue, which is great. Lee's art is nice, but again, you'll just, in the middle of all this storytelling, you'll suddenly get like cheesecake shot
yeah.
of Rogue, which is fine. I mean, I'm going to give Claremont all the credit in the world, right? I don't read the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
I only read the X-Men, the Burn Run,
yeah,
into Paul Smith, and then I tailed off when John Jr. was doing it.
Right.
And I never really went back. I was not lost. I read this issue. I fully understood what was going on. I fully understood who all the characters were, and I understood the story that he was telling, even though this is literally like the midpoint of some obviously long storyline.
Yeah.
And it's hard to believe that only like 4 or 5 issues from now, Claremont gets kicked to the curb.
Right.
After 17 years of writing this book, because Bob Harris wanted to give it to Jim Lee.
Right.
And I do sometimes wonder if Jim Lee feels a bit guilty about that. Probably not, because he made a lot of money. And final facsimile before we start going on about our new comics, I bought Justice League #1. Now, this, look at that. In comparison to the Marvel one, look at the paper.
Yeah.
The colours are vibrant, even though it feels like paper. It's got all the great adverts in it. This was a 1950s one. It's got that page that was a requirement to educate kids.
Oh, right.
With
okay.
some proper science
yeah.
about the moon. It's got a letters page. It's absolutely brilliant. It's why I buy these, because I will never own a Justice League #1. But here I can for less than £3.
Yeah.
And it's mine, and I get to look at it. It's a historical piece.
Mm.
That said, this is why I preferred Marvel.
Right.
This is a prime example of a DC story. It's interdimensional beings fleeing from other interdimensional beings. There's lots of little green aliens playing chess for the safety of the universe. And I've got to be honest, as a kid, I found it hard to cur. As an adult, I'm reading it going, this is kid stuff.
Yeah.
This is very definitely written for 8 years old. Even the characters, Superman, Batman, The Flash, they're all just costumes going through the motions. It's fun and imaginative, but there's nothing me to latch onto at this point. But then it's interesting to compare it as a historical artifact that by the time you get to the Secret Wars Crisis facsimiles,
yeah.
how that's completely turned around. Crisis still holds up as a piece of work that you can read as an adult, and Secret Wars is very definitely for 12-year-olds.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's interesting how that happened. So I picked that one up as well. Should we do an email before we crack on? Because we got quite a lot of emails, which is nice. It's always nice to get emails. Gene Hendricks emailed in. I think we asked Gene to email in, didn't we? If he was listening. Hello, Andy and Michael. I just finished listening to your Jack Kirby episode. I wanted to give you some of my thoughts. I don't remember ever being anti-Kirby. Were you Uncle Kirby? Dad jokes. But that's probably because I never saw his stuff when I was younger. By the time I was reading comics, 1982 and later, Kirby wasn't doing anything with Marvel or DC with the exception of the Superpowers comics and the occasional special issue. So when I was introduced to the King, it was when I was in middle school and got the Marvel Masterworks containing the first 10 Avengers issues. By that time, I was already on board with various artists, so there wasn't anything off-putting there, although the Hulk with 3 toes on each foot was weird. We noticed that, didn't
no.
That he only had 3 toes. That's cool. Because I know the Thing has his like toes fused together, his fingers, doesn't he? He's like only got 3 fingers.
Well, that works, I guess.
Yeah, it worked. I do agree that Jack needed someone, whether that was Stan or just a strong editor, to put some controls on him. His ideas are great, but he needed someone to focus on and something rather than let him run wild. I might need to check out his New Gods or Eternals work at some point. It's the only times I've seen those properties when somebody else has used them. As for the 2001 series, I have read all of them, and the Every Character Must Go Through a Dave Bowman did gets a little old after a while. Speaking of old, I don't think I've seen or heard of anyone other than Kirby have the interpretation that Bowman was rapidly aging at the end of the film. I've always thought that we were getting glimpses of his timeline as a captive specimen of the intelligence behind the monolith, but that he was aging normally. The Machine Man stuff in the comic is interesting, but I never latched onto him as a character either. Gene. P.P.S. Oh, no, there's a PS first, because that's how it works.
Yeah.
If this episode you were looking for, Two True Freaks podcast, long play Strangers Here We Come. Yes,
yeah.
We talked about the Strangers Here We Come, and I could not for the life of me remember what it was.
But
there you go. And if you want the rest of the 2001 series, I might know of a way for that to happen. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. I think I've got them.
Right.
I think I've got them in a nudge, nudge, wink, wink kind of way.
Okay.
But thank you, Gene. And Gene's been ill recently, so get well soon. So thank you for letting us know about long play. Because I had completely forgotten what we recorded that for. Anyway, go on, you start.
So this is just because I just moved it up in the pile because of what we mentioned about the symbiote Spider-Man
yeah.
Earlier on. Now, this is Spider-Man, Black Suit and Blood.
Hmm.
Marvel, DC did a few of these at first, kind of jumping on the back of Batman Black and White in its various iterations.
Yeah.
Because they did a Superman Red, Blue and White or something, and then they did a
Wonder... Yeah, they've done a Wolverine one.
They did a Wonder Woman Black, White and Gold. So then they did a Wolverine, yeah. And I think I read that.
They've done a Darth Vader one.
They did, yeah, and then I think they did an alien one as well.
I think so, yeah.
And the more they do, it gets kind of further away from, well, what's the point?
Yeah, it gets, just gets more diluted.
But I picked this one up just with it being the symbiote Spider-Man stuff, and I'm going through it, and I actually read it on the train here just to say that I had read it so we could talk about it. And it's one of those things with, like you were mentioning, it's a bunch of short stories, but one of them has nothing to do with a black suit.
He just happens to be wearing it.
Yeah. There's one, it's Mary Jane's in the house and there's a symbiote haunting her, but it doesn't go anywhere. It's like 3 pages.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Steve Ditko's now a Disney legend. I'm sure he'd be made up.
And then there's a Dustin Goyen one where it's a nightmare where Peter's run away from the black costume. And then there's a Straczynski one about the power of costumes and why people wear a costume. Mm. And it's just one of those things where it's like, well, it's fine.
Are you not buying any more then?
I don't, like, especially considering it costs more. This is $6.
Really?
Yeah.
Fuckadoodle. Can I have your digital code then?
I didn't feel like I got much from it. The artwork defeats the point of the whole black, white and red thing because there's a lot of use of colour in it.
Mm.
And yeah, the whole thing just left me feeling a bit, what's the point? None of these stories need the black costume, really. Right. None of these stories need to be in black and white. Like, you know when you got... Say, the best thing that I can compare this to is the Superman one. So, for instance, when you add Batman, black and white, Batman lives himself, so you can have a horror one, and it's in black and white, so it works. You can have a cosmic horror one, a lot of artists utilize it. Because
Batmans are immalleable anywhere.
Exactly. So, Batman black and white, fine. Yeah, the Superman one, you ended up getting a lot of people who didn't know how to write Superman. So 90% of those stories would just be, hi.
Was one of them Tom King?
Hi, I'm Superman and I do nice things. And every issue was just about the moral right to do the good thing and to be a good person. And they also just happen to be
Superman
with a dash of blue in them. Yeah. And this is the same thing. It's just a case of, I'm Spider-Man and I do the right thing. By the way, I'm in my black costume.
Right.
That's all this is. So it's... I kind of don't want this trend to die because I know the Wolverine one was good. It worked well. The Batman one, it always works well.
But you like Wonder Woman Gold,
Gold one was really good as well. And it's just kind of one of those things where it's a bit of a mixed bag because with it being an anthology, they're already a mixed bag.
Hmm.
But I don't see the point of this. Like, was it to tie in with the anniversary of the symbiote suit? In which case...
Very possibly.
Why?
Is it 30 or 40?
I think so, yeah. But in that case then, have it be about it rather than just have him in the costume. And it even says right at the start, over the years, Peter has rejoined the symbiote or wore a black fabric costume in the costume. These are some untold tales. So it's not even about it. It's just Spider-Man stories, but he's wearing a black costume.
Mm.
So... On all levels, I fundamentally don't understand the point behind this. Yeah. I'm just kind of hoping that, well, maybe at least one of the four stories will be good enough to justify it.
And it's not like Peter David's not been doing miniseries, quite a lot of them at this point. There's four or five now, set in this time period.
Yeah.
Where he's wearing the black costume.
So I don't get it.
Right.
But, I mean, I've got the second issue at home, so maybe that'll be better. But these kind of things are just... They're very much, you read them and you kind of put them to one side. They don't have any kind of staying power, these anthology series, but I just, it's fine. If you're going to pick it up for cheap.
Well, you're going to give me the digital code, so you're going to be cheaper than that. My next, Battle Action's back.
Yes.
I have subscribed through 2000 AD.
Right.
Because if you subscribe, you essentially get one issue for free.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, you only pay for 9 issues and you get the full 10.
Yeah.
So that was very nice. It was quite a surprise. I didn't know it was coming back this soon.
Right.
We were at the Liverpool Comic Mart and we went to Forbidden Planet and there was issue 1 on the stands.
Oh, yeah.
Because I said to you, did you know Battle Action was coming back?
I did, because I think Chris Burnham was posting about it.
Right, very good, very nice. So I didn't buy that first issue from Forbidden Planet because I thought, well, I've got no reason to go to a comic shop every month.
Yeah.
And I may miss issues. So as soon as I got home, I subscribed through Rebellion's actual website.
Okay.
Quite happy to see they had this deal on where you subscribe and you get an issue free. So that's very, very nice. So it reduces the price significantly. It's only a fiver an issue.
Yeah.
It's a, again, as with the other volume, it's a beautiful magazine reprint. There's no text pieces in this one, which I was a bit sad about because I think they give good context.
This is just your average monthly one now, isn't it? Well, I think the other one with the text pieces was just a...
There was a text piece in issue one.
Right.
Brian K. Vaughan, of all people,
did
a kids' Rouleau care strip.
Right.
And he did a text piece explaining how he didn't grow up with any of this. Mm. But through knowing British creators, they've said, yeah, we didn't grow up with that superhero stuff. We grew up with this, and they gave him copies of Battle Action.
Okay.
And he was actually quite shocked at the stuff we were getting away with in our comics. So he, that was his attempt at doing one. And it's actually quite good. He makes a decent stab of it. Mm. He doesn't come across as an American writing Cockney.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty damn good. So I was impressed.
It is always funny, though, isn't it? The kind of contrast between British and American stuff. Like, our Dennis the Menace is much more of a...
Well, he was. I think he's calmed down a bit now.
He's much more of a rascal than that dastard who just stole cookies.
Yeah, our Dennis the Menace. It's like Bart Simpson versus Stewie, isn't it? Simpson's just kind of a rascal.
Yeah.
Stewie's a bastard.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the same thing. This one, Ennis is doing a multi-part story this time. He's doing a multi-part Johnny Red story, which, again, is really good. Good art by Keith Burns. But the backup strip every month is a different strip.
Okay.
So Kids Rule OK was in issue one. This is HMS Knights, shared by John Wagner and Dan Cornwell. Again, I can't fault this. Mm. I'm genuinely loving Battle Action. I think it's one of them. We talked about the guy at Thought Bubble. Why is it not on Asda? Why is it not in Sainsbury's?
Yeah.
And he gave us all really good reasons for it. And I think that's a shame, because I think this would appeal to people who don't normally read comics. Mm. It says like 2000 AD did.
Yeah.
But it's good to have it back. I'm glad it's back for longer this time. It's going for 10 issues.
There are still books like this, because I know I saw some in W.H. Smith.
Yeah, they do the Commando reprints, don't they?
But there are always little ones at the bottom in the comic section, and no one looks at those.
No, and I think it's a shame, because I love Battle Action. I think it's brilliant.
So this one, I think it only just came out this month.
It did.
It's the Zero Hour 30th Anniversary Special. Now, these are ones... I always get these, the anniversary specials and the kind of big ones, because the kind of the thing is I just throw them on my pull list. And then when the order is ready to be paid for, Ace will say, here's your comics, this is how much it costs. And I'll go, it cost how much? But I've already committed at that point.
See, so I work out how much it's going to cost every month and I trim accordingly.
I'm an idiot. I've been subscribing to Ace Comics since I was in my last year of uni, so that was years ago.
10.
And... I never learn my lesson, because it's very easy on the website when it's like, oh, add this title. We don't know how much it'll cost.
I do it through the download, the CSV download, which gives you the price.
I just add them onto it. So what it does is it tells you the price of the last issue.
Right.
So if it's a new one or a one-off, they don't have that point of reference. So I only ever find out when it's like...
I always trim mine and keep it to a certain price.
No, I'm an idiot. so this came out, and I've always liked these. Some of them have been very much hit and miss.
The Death of Superman one was good, wasn't it?
The Return of Superman one I got bored with, and it was weird as well. So it's the 30th, 20th anniversary?
No, it'll be 30th, wouldn't it? 1990, whatever, it's as old as you.
Anniversary of Return of Superman. And it says that on it, 30th anniversary, whatever. It's about... a story that was set in a specific point in time. Like, you can move it around, whatever. Mm. But the Lois and...
Oh, yeah, you said that they've got cell phones.
Yeah. So you've still got very 90s depictions of ghettos and that. Yeah. But they've all got smartphones.
Yeah.
It's weird. It specifically states when it's set.
But they've still got modern technology.
Yeah, it's a bizarre one. So I've not read this one yet, but...
Which is a shame, because I'm going to borrow this off you, because I picked this up last time we were in town.
Yeah.
And then I saw it was $10 and thought, no!
From the looks of it, this seems to be a singular story as well, just a triple, quadruple-sized one.
Does it take place within 0 hour, or is it a new story?
I believe it's during.
Right, okay. So it's an excuse for him to reprint Zero, but with some new material in it,
which is nice, because I've not read it in years, but I've always had a soft spot.
We loved
Zero Hour.
We both read Zero. I can't remember if we covered it on the show, and if we didn't, maybe we should.
And it's going to be an interesting one, because similar to the Return of Superman, is this set during then, or have they slid the timeline?
They modernized it, yeah.
Which is always a shame. Like, you've called it the 30th anniversary special.
Just accept that it's not real.
Yeah.
You don't have to modernize it. Just accept that, you know, this was in the 90s. But and all the characters are still 33.
I've always liked these. They feel good. They feel special. They're square bound.
Yeah.
And you know that it cost a lot of money, and it's a nice one because you've got a little,
got a side panel.
You've got the title on the side, on like the spine.
Book.
Exactly.
Like a proper book.
It feels proper.
Yeah, it does. I looked at it and thought $10, and you were with me and said, oh yeah, I bought that. So I thought I'd just read yours.
Yeah. Like I just add things like, oh, it's like I'm going down a shopping aisle full of comics, and it's like, oh, I don't care about the price. And then I get to the checkout.
And then you get the price. My next one is another magazine, The Savage Sword of Conan. Number 4. I've been loving Titans Conan stuff. The magazine is another thing to love. It has text pieces in it. This has got a lot of different strips in it. I felt a little bit gypped by this one.
Gypped?
Yes. I don't mind that Conan is popular enough for Titan for them to do a new miniseries called Battle for the Black Stone.
Mm-hmm.
I object ever so slightly that Battle for the Black Stone began in the magazine. Because it feels like it's only £4, £5. So because it's black and white, so it's not expensive.
Hmm.
But every single story in this, there's a Conan story, a Solomon Kane story, a Brissa story, Conrad and Kirwan, Dark Agnes and El Borax. So all essentially what they're doing is an Robert Howard multiverse story.
Okay.
All of Robert E. Howard's characters are going to appear in this storyline, which I don't think has been done before.
Right.
I could be wrong, but I don't think it's been done before. And that's why they're doing it, because they own the rights to all the Howard back catalogue.
So why not?
Exactly. But I'm a bit miffed that they started it in the magazine. I think you're paying a premium for the magazine.
Right.
I kind of think it should be kept separate from what's going on in the main stories, but like Marvel did.
Hmm.
Now, the flip side of that is every story in this does stand alone. So you can read it and not really be bothered about the Blackstone stuff. But, you know, there was just a little bit of a sour taste. But that doesn't take away from the fact that most of this has been very enjoyable from day one. And I'm thoroughly enjoying it. And it's got lots of sex and nudity in it and lots of violence. But also lots of different art styles, as you can see.
So none of this is reprint.
It's all new
for this.
Yeah, all new stuff. Eric Donovan's work for Conrad and Kirwan, I loved. Very scratchy, but very good in black and white. But then you've got the Brissa storyline where it's very manga.
Mm.
So there's lots of... It's good. It's great. And I like that they include excerpts from the new novels that are coming out. So you can decide when you want to read the novel. I'm loving that Roberto Del Torre is very much channeling John Buscema.
Yes, yeah.
In this. And it's good. And the first... If this had been a chat about the first 3 issues, I would have been effusive in my praise. But because this was tied into Battle with the Blackstone, kind of felt
so. There's comics and magazines.
Yes, right. We will come to the comics in a bit.
Okay, the next one, just mostly to get it out of the way, because I've still got a few more, but I didn't want to end negatively, and that's cool. So to be a little more negative now, is my next one is the Immortal Thor. Now this is one that I'm constantly on the verge of dropping.
I have done.
The only reason why I don't think I have dropped it yet is, to be completely honest, this is issue 12.
Hmm.
I think there's been 4 or 5 more issues since. This is the last one. In fact, I've not even read this. I forget about it every month, so I forget to get rid of it off my order. And it's just...
It's so forgettable, you forget to cancel it.
Piling up. Now, I didn't care about Thor. I've never cared about Thor. I got this on the back of the Immortal Hulk.
Hmm.
Which is one of the best modern Marvel comics in recent history, or at least, at the very least, the one that stood out and is probably my favourite. And so I was like, okay, fine. I didn't care about the Hulk before. I don't care about the Hulk now, but this was good enough that I will jump onto another character that I don't care about.
Right. Because of Al Ewing.
I still don't care about Thor, and I don't care about the story. And to be completely honest, I couldn't tell you what's going on. I forget every month, and then by the time I'm caught up, it's like, all right, okay. And then I don't care enough to move on to the next one.
Right.
I don't know what this is. Was I expecting more from it? is it just not as good as the Hulk? Do I not care about the character as much? There's a lot of things which just I'm more than happy to accept. It's just not my bag. But I kind of feel like you had this highlight, this career highlight for a writer, this publication highlight for Marvel, how it can just go to being so, yeah. Because I don't see this talked as much about as Hulk was.
When it started, it wasn't. I read like the first 6 or 7 issues.
Yeah.
And I liked it for about 4 or 5 of them.
Yeah.
And then like you, I think it was around the 4 or 5, it starts to sit on the pile, not read.
Yeah.
And I'm at the point where if I've got 2 or 3 issues of a book that is sitting on the pile unread, if you have a look over the Captain America.
Yeah.
I've got like the last 4 issues of that sat on the pile over there.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with them, but there's other things I would rather spend my money on.
Yeah. And it's just, I don't find it as interesting. And I'm really kind of curious as to whether it's just a me or another thing. Everyone was talking about the Hulk, the Immortal Hulk.
And it kept that momentum
consistently,
going.
Consistently, yeah.
Some of it, for slightly controversial reasons, but still.
People were still saying, this is really good,
yeah.
You should be reading this.
Yeah.
Even with it being reprinted into omnibuses, people go and read this.
Yeah.
I've not seen anyone, apart from the whole rocks and metatextual stuff, but a few little moments don't make it worth reading.
Yeah.
I don't see anyone talk about this. It doesn't have near enough the amount of kind of praise that the Immortal Hulk did, that I'm kind of wondering if we're isolated in our not enjoying of it, but not enjoying it as much.
There's also the thing though that there's no one place to go to get into a comics conversation anymore.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people have abandoned Twitter. I'm one of them.
Yeah.
So I'm not in comics Twitter anymore.
It's not even just that. I've been going on it and 90% of it is people that I don't follow, and no surprise, my Twitter is mostly comics, Gundam.
Well, most of mine was comics, films, and TV writers.
Yeah.
I follow a lot of TV writers because I'm genuinely interested in how TV's made.
Yeah.
And then, like, you had to suddenly be getting these random political things that I'm not interested in, and I'd be getting these dumbass posts from Elon where he clearly has no idea what he's talking about. He's spouting his opinion as if he does.
Yeah.
And I just thought, no, I'm not supporting you anymore.
So it's just...
And I've unsubscribed from Twitter.
I mean, I'm in too deep now. I am chronically online that I can't leave it.
No, like, I've gone.
I need... It's like Bill Hicks. I need to pump up my hate hump every once in a while to keep me going.
See, I don't. I'm on Threads, and that has a comics Threads.
Yeah.
But again, I've not seen anyone talk about Immortal Hulk. And a lot of Threads seems to be talking about older comics.
Right.
And a lot of, obviously, talk about the movies.
Mm.
And I love that there's a lot of talk about the Batman and the Penguin. And there's very much the people that love the Batman think it's the best thing ever.
Yeah.
And there's people who are like, ugh. And I'm like, it's fine. I got what they were going for. I like the idea that Batman's a detective in it.
Yeah.
And I like that it's him becoming a hero, essentially. But I think it's an hour too long.
See, I've not rewatched it, but I remember being in the cinema just going,
this feels long.
Long.
You know the best thing about it? It's a Batmobile that actually feels fast. never bought that any of the others could top out at 40.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas Robert Pattinson's Batmobile feels like a muscle car. And I'm down with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't see anyone talking about Immortal Thor anyway. And I dropped it as well. And I didn't drop it because I think it's bad. I dropped it for the same reason I've dropped Captain America. There is nothing wrong with it. But it's not special enough to keep paying money for.
It's not bad enough for it to be bad. It's not bad enough for me to sit here and say, this is bad and I hate it.
No, it's...
It's forgettable.
It's fine.
Yeah. It's... Al Ewing is not a bad enough writer that it's bad.
No, he's not. But at $5 an issue, fine, don't cut it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And just, it's not interesting.
Nope.
For me, at least.
And I was the same. I got 3 or 4 issues that piled up that I'd never read and thought, right, I'm not buying it anymore.
Yeah.
There's no point. Conan. Oh, Gatchaman. I was going to leap into Conan. Gatchaman.
Yeah. You don't mean Battle of the Planets?
Yes. But also, no.
Yeah.
Gatchaman. I'm loving this.
Right.
I'm genuinely loving Gatchaman. Like you just said, it's still hard for me to think of these characters as by the Battle of the Planets names.
Yeah.
To me, they're still Mark and Jason and Tiny and Princess and Keop.
Right.
So when they're referred to by the Gatchaman names, it's just really confusing. But I don't care because the tone is closer to Gatchaman.
Yeah,
It's a little bit more violent. But it's a very fun and entertaining read. And the art's lovely and clean. And I love that you still get a panty shot, a princess. Because when you were a kid, you were like, oh, you just saw princess's panties. Oh, strange disturbance in my utility belt. Because like we were eight, you know. Give us some what's his name.
It was like finding two curiously shaped rocks in the forest and going, oh, hello.
Clean art by Chris Batista. Compliments Cullen Bunn stories. My thing with this is I'd love to know how well this is selling.
Right.
Because Gatchaman, still popular in Japan, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Still very, very big over there. They've done subsequent series as well, haven't they? And spin-offs so on and so forth. But surely over here, this is a niche of a niche. Maybe. Because like you just said, it's not even a Battle of the Planets comic.
Yeah.
It's a comic based on the thing Battle of the Planets sanitized and so dumbed down.
You're already being really specific with your niche.
Yeah, and it's one of those, I've got all the, it made me get all the Gatchaman cartoons. I've got all 80-odd episodes from nefarious sources.
Of course.
And I've watched them. You can't watch them while you're doing something else, though, because they're the Japanese dub.
Yeah, right.
So you've got to read the subtitles.
Your subs, yeah.
Yeah, which is fine, which is good. But it is so interesting. What I did right with the first episode, I watched the first episode, and then I watched the first episode of Battle of the Planets.
Right, okay.
And it's lovely to see the little edits.
Yeah.
Like, Princess will legitimately knee somebody in the bollocks. Right. That's not in the American version.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jason, or whatever his name is in Gatchaman, throws his little what's-his-name, and it literally slits throats.
Okay, yeah.
Not in the American version. And it's those little edits that you're like, oh, right, okay, I see what they were doing. But it was interesting to see how they've recontextualized it.
Mm.
That Gatchaman's all on Earth.
Right. Yeah.
Battle of the Planets is on different planets. So there's different art shots of the Phoenix, which is the God Phoenix in Gatchaman.
Okay.
So they don't call it the God Phoenix in the American one.
Right.
And how it becomes the Fiery Phoenix is a different thing. And there's just all these lovely little differences. But what I love about it, it's got interlocking covers.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they've got about four different covers. So I have to be sure when I get issue 4 and 5.
The interlocking ones.
Yeah, but I'm genuinely loving Gatchaman because it is... It's what's his name? It is a superhero thing, but it isn't.
Yeah.
And it is got that childhood nostalgia because it's Battle of the Planets, but it isn't.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing with as well, Battle of the Planets, apart from the theme, but they change the opening theme, always five, acting as one. Other than that, all the incidental music is the same as Gatchaman.
Okay.
So the music's the same. But it's singy. Gatchaman!
Oh, yeah.
It's brilliant. I love it. So I'm loving this comic. I'm loving watching the cartoons. And I'm loving Gatchaman. And now I want a Phoenix toy. You know, the ship.
Right.
But do you know what it is? Because did you ever watch any Battle of the Planets?
No, I don't think I did.
Because it's surely out of your age range, Battle of the Planets, isn't it? The Phoenix.
Okay.
Love the Phoenix ship. Love that ship. But yeah, Battle of the Planets started in 78.
Yeah.
Came to America on the back of Star Wars, re-edited, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Ran on the BBC till the 90s.
Okay.
They just recycled those episodes over and over and over again. But Gatchaman. Did we ever get Gatchaman?
I don't remember it. I remember of it.
There was another version of Battle of the Planets, right?
Okay.
That wasn't called Battle of the Planets. There was another English dub.
Right.
And all the characters had different names again. And it was a more faithful dub than Battle of the Planets, but it still wasn't Gatchaman.
Right.
So there's your other confusion. There's three versions of this
for
the Western audience. The Eastern audience just have Gatchaman.
Yeah.
But for us, there's three different versions of it.
Well, I
think it was just called G-Force.
Okay. I mean, to be fair, there's also, it's similarly confusing. They'll probably talk about it when we get up to Dragon Ball Z. There are three different versions of Dragon Ball Z.
Mm-hmm.
All of them still called Dragon Ball Z. So that, I mean, that's confusing as well.
Yes, yeah. So anyway, I'm loving Gatchaman. But like I said, I don't know how long it's going to last.
Yeah.
Because it is a niche of a niche. But as long as it lasts, I'm there for it.
I mean, I've got a very niche one, but we'll save that for later because that's one I'm very much enjoying.
Okie dokie.
But next for me is a bit of a mixed bag. It's one that I've been looking forward to for quite a while. This is Wolverine Revenge. It is
Jonathan Hickman.
It's and Greg Capullo
doing
his first interior art for Marvel. And so he's been talking a lot about it and teasing quite a lot about
it.
Really? Yeah.
Has he never worked for Marvel before?
At the very least, not since he's big.
Since Spawn and then Batman.
Yeah.
All right.
So this is one that I've been looking forward to for quite a while, simply just for Capullo. I'll be completely honest, I didn't know it was Hickman until I picked it up.
Mm.
This is the Red Band version.
Right, so it's got violence in it.
Yeah. I've seen it. Someone's compared it. It's just some panels are different. Enough for me to kind of think, well, if I can pick up the...
It's just a sales thing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it came in a poly bag as well.
Oh, fuck's sake.
But there's enough difference in artwork that it's like, oh, well, that's interesting.
Mm.
I think there's an entire extra page added into this as well.
You don't have scan a QR code for it, do you?
No. but it's... Not
artwork looks nice.
The artwork's great. Mm. The story's awful.
Oh, right, okay.
Absolutely awful.
Fair enough.
Magneto has crashed Asteroid M into Earth, decimating the half the entire population. Mm. As he's done so, he's set off an EMP, so all the technology's down.
Right.
As a last ditch effort, there's Wolverine, Captain America, and Bucky and Nick Fury, but they all die. They all get blown up gratuitously, but. Apart from Wolverine, who gets his regeneration factor and goes out to get those who's killed him, which obviously includes Deadpool because they're in a movie together.
Mm.
It's awful. It's garbage. It's gratuitous. It's gratuitous for the sake of it. But Capullo's artwork's great, and I'm going to pick up the rest of it.
For Capullo's artwork?
Like, there's absolutely no doubt I'm going to read the rest of this. I won't like it, but it'll be pretty.
Right, okay. Fair enough. Well, speaking of Jonathan Hickman... Ultimate Spider-Man number 9
hey.
Came in my pack this week. This is a weird one as well.
Right.
Month in, month out, Jonathan Hickman comic. So it'll come as no surprise to you that nothing happens.
Okay.
It literally is Jonah and Ben Parker hanging out at bars and chatting about their new venture, which is a newspaper that's not owned by a conglomerate, so they can say what they want and report right. the truth. Spider-Man and the Green Goblin, Peter and Harry, just hanging out and chatting. Getting tech upgrades off Dr. Octavius. Mary Jane and Peter being all lovey-dovey. You sit there wondering why the hell Gwen Stacy's with Harry, but whatever. All wrapped up in some nice art by Marco Cicchetto. And yet, against all odds, it's actually quite gripping.
Right.
Weirdly.
This isn't one that I'm reading. I think I read your first issue when it started. And it's one that I'm interested in.
Yeah, I'll lend them you.
By all accounts, everything I'm hearing is this is the best Spider-Man's been in a long time.
Is it though?
I wouldn't know, but it is one of those things that's interesting because A, they've allowed Peter to grow up.
Well, he was 35 when he got bitten by the spider.
Right. And also, I think it's quite an interesting and incredibly potent backstory that the whole point of this Ultimate Universe is there's a generation of people who have had their youth stolen from them.
Yeah.
And they want them back. And I think that's quite, especially now, after everything the last few years with COVID and everything, that's quite an interesting angle to go in from. Yeah.
It is weird how much I'm enjoying it, given that it is typical of the kind of comic I normally say I don't like. Yep. Nothing happens. I do wonder why bearded Peter Parker doesn't itch under his mask, though.
Or why the stubble doesn't stick through.
Yeah.
So. But I don't know if it's the same. When I read that first issue, it felt weighty. It felt like there was some depth to it. Is that something that's continued throughout them, right?
It does feel like something's happening.
Yeah.
And it's one of those, I suspect, when I sit down and read them all... You can recontextualise it.
Yeah.
But on a monthly basis, you put it down at the end of every month and go, well, it really happened there, did it? So, okay.
So to get onto some good stuff now.
Oh, right.
Is this a Plastic Man No More? Huge surprise. It's a DC Black Label. But to go back to everything that I said about the Black Labels, it's a standard format, standard page numbers.
So not magazine
it
format.
It just has a cardstock cover. Mm. There's no reason for this to be Black Label. I mean, it's out of continuity,
I guess. And
it's only
a fiver with the cardstock cover, right? Okay.
Absolutely great stuff. Again, this B-list, C-list character that no one really cares
D-list
about.
D-list Plastic Man, surely.
He's joined the Justice League. He's been hit by a death ray. The death ray is melting him, so you get some body horror. He goes to speak to a specialist who goes, no, this is the natural process. The death ray has just sped everything up.
Mm.
He's now thinking, well, there's no hope for me then. He tries to get in touch with his son, who he walked out on. His son wants nothing to do with him, but the only thing Plastic Man cares about now is he's going to die. How can he save his son? And it's great.
And I'm not laughing at that synopsis, which sounds good. I'm just detective chimp is in this.
Yeah.
I am because, so there for Detective Chimp.
But he's the only one who pays any attention to Plastic Man because the Justice League are wrapped up in Justice League stuff.
Well, aren't they always?
It's genuinely...
The art does look nice.
Genuinely such a great surprise.
Yeah.
Body horror, crime noir, family drama.
Right. Okay, well, maybe this is a future candidate for coverage. Sorry, I would have had to buy the Michael Aldred cover.
Well, I didn't choose.
Yeah, right. Okay, fair enough. Right, Conan the Barbarian makes comeback. I've got issues 14 and 15 here. So they both must have come out at roughly the same time for me to get two issues in one package. This has been doing great, Conan stories. Lots of violence. Lots of shagging and sex.
Are they separate?
Which is basically what you want from a Conan story, isn't it? Like, it starts with a bloodbath.
Right.
As you would expect. It ends with him screwing somebody.
Okay.
Perfect.
Is that shagging or is that sex?
That's the sex.
Right, okay.
Shagging and sex. Sorry, I went through that. Yes, lots of shagging and fighting, I meant to say. Not so much supping of ale.
Okay.
In this particular issue, which is another thing you want from your Conan stories. Essentially, issue 15 is just a retelling of the Frost Giant's daughter.
Right.
But it's done differently enough that it doesn't overwrite the Barry Windsor Smith one, which I really enjoyed. But again, they give it some weight by delving into Conan's personality.
Mm.
That he's not this thick lunk that you think he is. He's very smart.
Yeah.
Which is how he manages to survive. It's not just that he can swing a broadsword. It's that he can outthink his enemies as well, who seriously underestimate him because he looks like them. But he's not. He's actually great. Brilliant art by Dougie Braithwaite. The colouring is fantastic. Richard Starkin's doing some great lettering that evokes the 70s feel. But it's also text pieces.
Okay.
So you've got a lovely contextualisation there of the Frost Giant's daughter and where it came from. The second story to be written didn't sell.
Right.
So he changed the names of it and sold it as something else.
Okay.
And only later he went back to the original Conan version.
Yeah.
When Conan became more popular. It's a two-page text version this month, so you don't get the letters page. But you normally get a letters page as well. But they also show you all the other covers, which I like when they do that, because you don't feel as ripped off.
Yeah.
Because you do sometimes look at this and go, oh, I'd have had another cover.
Yeah.
But like, I don't tend to order by the cover. But overall, generally impressed by Titans, Conan the Barbarian comics.
And another Black Label one for me is Zatanna Bring Down the House. Again, absolutely.
Is this your Zatanna fetish?
Well, is it? This is also really, really good as well. It's Zatanna as a child was responsible for killing a child.
Hmm.
Since then, she just does not do music. She's a
magic.
She does not do magic.
I was going to say she's a musician.
Music, yeah. She doesn't do magic. She's a Vegas stage performer. And it's
has
just,
she not been that before?
Yeah.
Right.
But she just outright does not do magic.
Right, okay.
And it's absolutely great. The artwork is great in it. But again, it's another...
It's a quick read,
is my problem with these as well. And again, it's Black Label, but it's not the dimensions, it's not the page count. It's kind of a shame that the best examples of DC's Black Label, and we mentioned this when we did Catwoman, are your overlooked characters, your overlooked stories. I want more of this. Instead, we just get more prestige Batman books.
Mm.
It's such an absolute shame that they've got a format that allows these books, but they're not utilising them because they want more Batman. But this and the Plastic Man are absolutely great. Great art, great story. Just
very Chris Samney, isn't it?
Yeah, criminally overlooked.
Javier Rodriguez. Right, okay. Yeah, it does. It looks quite good. Why is this more expensive than the Plastic Man one, though?
I just don't know.
No idea.
No.
Okay, fair enough. Just wondered, because it feels like the same kind of thing. Fantastic 14, 25. I like that I'm still more mainstream than you are. another lovely Dunning one, science fiction story from writer Ryan North, supported this issue by artist Carlos Gomez. If I have a complaint, it's that the artist has been different quite a lot. There's not been a consistent run, but this has overall been an absolutely stellar run on Marvel's First Family. Arguably the best this strip's been since Hickman. And as long as he doesn't drop a bollock, this may end up being heralded as one of the up there with Wade Waringo, John Byrne. Mm. Every month he delivers solid science fiction fables, one or two issues. He's never really gone over that, although there is a continuing narrative arc going on behind it. And he mostly does it by doing different configurations of the team. So last time, even though it was a crossover with Blood Oath or Blood Death or whatever vampire crossover was called that I didn't care about, it was Reed and Alicia.
Right.
So it's putting two characters together that don't normally go together and then telling these offbeat science fiction stories with them. Because the story you played with, and even though you can argue with the premise, Reed was very much, well, I don't believe in vampirism because it's magic. It's not science. It's not based in any scientific fact. And Alicia actually says to him, you have met Morbius, right? but he maintains in his head, it's not science. So how can he defeat something that isn't science-based?
Right.
And that was the problem of the issue, and it was really good. North has got a really good talent for the characterization and always keeping the main four characters at the fore, pun intended, even though he's got lots of supporting characters. Alicia's now married to Ben, so she's a consistent part of the team. The kid's a consistent part of the team. It very much is what I think the FF is, which is Edgar Rice Burroughs meets Swiss Family Robinson. They're not superheroes.
Yeah.
I don't think the Fantastic Four are superheroes. They're a family of adventurers. It's different. And it's one of the best books people don't read.
Right.
Genuinely loving it.
I think this is my last one now.
Is it? Well, I've only got two. And then we've got Spider-Man. Are you ready, lovely listeners, for that?
So for me, my last one is Ultraman and the Avengers.
Oh,
this has been a long time coming. The when Marvel got the rights to Ultraman, they did them as a series of 5-issue minis.
Yeah,
and I believe this is the fourth one. So they did two Ultraman ones, then Ultra 7. Now it's Ultraman the Avengers, and they all connect. But it's told through miniseries. The problem with that is they kind of take a while to come out, that they have to catch you up in the respective first issues for you to remember what's gone on.
Yeah.
With this one, though, they teased it at the end of Ultra 7, but then it was delayed a year. It should have come out last year.
And is this a double-sized issue?
Yeah.
But still only $5?
Yeah. Oh. So some of them will have backup strips that actually pay off.
Yeah.
And they're all great. A reimagining of Ultra Q and Ultraman, but modern, but still respect the campiness of the shows. It's just in a modern audience, and they've all been great. But in this one, is Galactus has teamed up with one of the aliens, and now Galactus is a big threat, and the Galactus has gone over to the Ultraverse. Miles Morales, because he's from an alternate universe, is pulled through, teams up with the Ultraman guys. Then the Avengers show up and just go, we kind of might have dumped Galactus in your universe. Sorry about that.
Oops.
And so they team up together. And it's fun and it's dumb. And you get bits where it's just giant mechs fighting giant aliens. But it's great. And I love Ultraman anyway.
Well, so I watched the first Ultraman movie on Amazon because you said watch it. It's a great
Shin Ultraman
film.
Yeah.
And it was good fun.
It's great. This is completely different. So Hideaki Anno wanted to essentially reimagine and modernize the TV show, and the film Shin Ultraman is an adaptation of specific episodes. It's a remake, almost shot for shot remake of specific episodes, but it's very modern, it's very flashy, it's very stylistic. This is the opposite of that. It's a modern reimagining, but it still has its campiness. There's a stupid bit which is very funny in the original show. They all wear bright orange costumes. And there's a bit in this where they redesign their costume to be bright orange, and they make a point going, this is stupid, this is ugly. And it's like, nope, we're doing this now. It's like, it's nice, it's cute, it's fun. So this is the first issue. I don't know if the second one's out yet or if I've got it yet, but very much looking forward to it. It'll be 5 issues and I'll wait another year for the next one, no doubt.
But is that not better that they're doing good minis?
Oh, yeah.
Than churning out a monthly that's mediocre. Like, say, I don't know, Star Wars.
Yeah, definitely. And it's nice because it means they can break it down into chapters. So you had the Rise of Ultraman, the Trials of Ultraman, and then the Revenge of Ultra 7 and that. It's good. It's fun. And it means you can bring in new readers with every series, basically. Yeah. But the problem with it is if it gets delayed like this one was, you forget what's going on.
Right. You have to dig them all out and read them again. Right, my last one before we get into The Amazing Spider-Man, which is not what people want to hear. From the DC Vault, : Robin Lives! Oh, no, sorry, I've missed Death in the Family. Yeah. Robin Lives. But that's a bit of a title, isn't it? That's quite an unwieldy title. Billed as a sequel to Death in the Family. What if Jason Todd had lived? There's the joke with a bullet between his eyes.
It's the sequel to the reprint, isn't it?
It's the sequel to the reprint that showed us the ending that would have happened if people had voted for Jason to live.
Because I am buying this, but I'm getting this for Dana, so I've not read it.
All right, okay. Well, let's see how that goes for you. It's written by James DeMatteis. It's drawn by Rick Leonardi. On the one hand, I have a problem with that title. Because as you've just alluded to, From the Vault was advertised as old stories that never happened or were not published for one reason or another. Right. So Warren Ellis's Hellblazer story would be a From the Vault.
Okay.
It was it was finished but never published until much later down the line. I mean, possibly there's multiple reasons why that may not have happened. But this is a new story purporting to be an old story.
Yeah.
Now, it is enjoyable. Don't get me wrong. DeMatteis is a great writer. But he seems to have slipped into this era where this is what he's doing now. He's doing continuity insert miniseries. He's just done the same with Spider-Man with Shadow of the Goblin. And the problem with it is this does not feel like a lost 1980s story.
Yeah.
Just like Shadow of the Goblin didn't feel like a 1960s continuity insert.
It's just a modern comic set during that.
Yes. DeMatteis didn't write Batman at this point. He was over at Marvel.
Yeah.
Leonardi didn't draw Batman at this point. He was over at Marvel. So this feels like a Marvel series with Batman in it. Also, Rick Leonardi's artwork has evolved considerably since the 80s. And if you were to show me this without me knowing who it was, I wouldn't have said it was Rick Leonardi. This wouldn't be a problem if DC had billed this as an Elseworld, or whatever they called the multiverse stories nowadays, I don't know. It's enjoyable in its own right, but it can't be what it says it is, because it isn't 1988 anymore, and these creators aren't doing this in 1988. Yeah. But it also has elements of it that are a sequel to a Legends of the Dark Knight DeMatteis wrote in 2000.
Right, okay.
So this couldn't have been done in 1988.
Yeah.
And some people may say, well, that's not what it is, and I'd agree with you. Yeah. But if they're saying it's a From the Vault, it's kind of implied that it's going to be from that era. And it's weird, and I'm not enjoying it.
But it's not what it says it is.
Yeah, I'm a bit baffled by it, I'll be brutally honest with you.
They're weird when it comes to like the text, because they kind of want it to be a property. So it's kind of like when the subsequent reprints of Dark Victory called it the Long Halloween Documentary. The worst one.
With the Catwoman one.
The absolute worst one is Catwoman. Batman, the Long Halloween, Catwoman, When in Rome.
Yeah.
No, that's not what it is.
That's an incredible title.
Yeah.
To tag the Long Halloween on it to try and make it sell a few more copies.
No one's calling it that.
No, I mean, it's When in Rome.
First of all, no one's calling it Batman, the Long Halloween. It's the Long Halloween.
Yeah.
Second of all, no one's calling it Catwoman, When in Rome. It's When in Rome.
Yeah.
And then thirdly, no one is calling it Batman, the Long Halloween, Catwoman, When in Rome. You just want to slap on the Long Halloween and reprint it again.
And it's also, is that not taken away from Catwoman being able to carry her own series? We've got to put Batman's name in it.
Yeah.
Amazing Spider-Man 57 and 58.
Right.
These two issues came in my package this week.
Oh, is that another Romita Spider-Man in the Rain cover?
Yeah, and it's a good one, though, isn't it? I mean, he does it well, let's be honest.
If you're going to do something, do it well.
If you're going to do something, do it well. Zeb Wells is wrapping up what has been an infuriating run on everybody's favourite wall crawler. I've really enjoyed the Tombstone Crime War stuff.
Right.
All that stuff's been great.
Okay.
The interpersonal relationships between Peter and his new girlfriends. Issue 56, I think, just before this one, was literally an issue where Peter goes on a date.
Right.
With somebody that isn't Mary Jane.
Yeah.
Isn't Betty Brant.
Right.
Isn't someone we've seen before. It is a completely new character.
And that was allowed. Right, okay.
And it was great. It was a great issue. And halfway through, he runs off to go and be Spider-Man. And he goes outside, and it's the Rhino and someone else. I can't remember who else. Maybe Jackpot or something like that. It doesn't matter. And he just goes to him as Peter Parker and goes, look, guys, I'm on a date in this restaurant. You two are fighting in front of this restaurant. You are disrupting my date. Can you not do this now. Yeah. Can you not just do it another time? And they both look at him and go, all right, then. Yeah. And they just both go and get McDonald's together right. while Peter carries on with his day.
Okay.
And it was just a charming, lovely little issue. In contrast, however, he's got this kind of bizarro Spider-Man called Recrap.
Is he the...
Parker backwards.
Big bizarro yeah. guy, right.
And I hate that I genuinely don't find it funny.
Right.
It's notable only because Ed McGuinness's artwork is fun.
Yeah.
And every time that character shows up, I'm just like, oh, God, can we just not?
Yeah.
And it's normally like a four-issue arc because he's got to pad out a trade paperback.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, Christ. And I am just going to say it. We need to get rid of Mary Jane.
Yeah, everything I know about this run is Mary Jane or that guy.
Paul.
Yeah, yeah.
That she's with. We need to cut her loose at this point. The editors are adamant in the letters page, and I will get to the letters pages. They are adamant they're not getting back together. She's okay. not a viable supporting character when she's with somebody else. Once she's with somebody else, she's out of Peter's life.
Right.
So that completely guts her as a character. They've just turned her into a housewife and mother.
Okay.
Which I think kind of, nothing wrong with that, but kind of flies in the face of what Mary Jane was.
Yeah.
And I just think cut her loose. You're not getting them back together. Stop dangling that carrot in front of your readers. Yeah. Move her on. Say she's gone back to be musical theatre, which is what she started in the college. She was a dancer, she was a singer, she was a performer. She was not a model.
Right.
Go back and read the Romita Run, editors of Spider-Man. She was a musical theatre student.
Mm.
Say she's got a job in London on the West End.
Right.
Dancing, singing, in a production of, I don't know, Spider-Man life story, whatever. And she's gone. She's gone out of the book. Get her off. Don't bring her back. Because they're never going to convince us they're not getting together if she's still here.
Well, isn't that what they did with Straczynski? Where he did get rid of her, so it meant something when she came back.
Yeah, but don't bring her back.
Right.
Or just bring her back occasionally to screw Peter's life up and then leave again. A lot of it, again, editors, go back and read it, right? She got wrote out of the book after Len Wein left.
Yeah.
She's not in the Marv Wolfman run, Burley. She's not in the Denny O'Neill run at all.
Yeah.
She's only in the Roger Stern run briefly. And over in Spectacular Spider-Man, he's busy dating the Black Cat.
Right.
It's Tom DeFalco who brings her back, and then suddenly they're married.
Yeah.
And it's... I don't have a problem with the marriage. I have a problem with how they handled it. And I also have a problem with, as you know, I think Mary Jane was there for him at a time in his life when he needed her.
Yeah.
They both lost Gwen. For both of them, it was a massive wake-up call. For both of them, it was a lesson in mortality. That they're 19 years old, they've got their entire life in front of them. Gwen doesn't have that.
Yeah.
She's gone. She's been murdered. Her life has gone. And for a short time, they needed each other. And then they went their separate ways. And I think that's what it should have been. But it isn't. So it is what it is, and that is what it is. The letters page. Can we get into the letters pages?
Go on.
There is another great answer from editor Nick Lowe, who, after a few issues ago, insisting that coming of age was never a part of the Spider-Man story.
Okay.
Never.
Right.
You're reading the Dick Tour run. Tell me what you think of that.
In all fairness?
No, I think it is. I think it's very much those issues up until him going to college. They're very much him stopping being a teenager and becoming a man.
Hard disagree.
Okay.
It only becomes a shadow of a coming of age story when he graduates. There's a lot of it. It's not about Peter Parker. It's a Superman. It's a Spider-Man superhero comic. Peter Parker is not important. It's only halfway in the run, around the time he graduates, where it becomes about Peter Parker. I honestly don't think it's a coming of age story.
I could not disagree with you more.
It's not.
I think it's a Peter Parker strip.
It's not.
It's about Peter Parker.
He's barely in it, and when he is in it, he whines about Betty Brant or Liz Allen.
He does whine about that a lot.
A dick to Flash Thompson.
Flash deserves it.
And then he cries about Aunt May, and then he sells some pics to Jonah. There's no... honestly, there is... At least I'm not reading it this way. The only allusion to Peter's age is his setting, not himself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not... There is no aspect to coming of age. He graduates one issue. There's no build up to graduation. He just graduates.
I agree. There's no build up to graduation, but that entire master planner out where he's lifting the weight off his shoulder
isn't coming of age.
I think that's very definitely him demonstrating he's growing up.
And the best bit of that isn't him lifting the weights up. To me, it was the issue before that when it's the second time that we've actually acknowledged the death of Uncle Ben. The first time was
They don't do that at all,
do they? The first time was in the annual.
Yeah.
And then this time he says, he died because of me. I can't let May die because of me. That's not coming of age. See, that's responsibility.
I also think as it leads into the Romita stuff, it becomes a bit more about that.
I feel like that when Peter starts having actual relationships, but even with Liz Allen and Betty Brant, Peter does not have relationships, and it's a frustrating aspect of reading it, knowing where he's going to go. Ditko and Lee do not allow Peter Parker to have these relationships.
But he does with Gwen. And he starts thinking about, I'm going to have to stop doing this at some point. I need a proper job. I'm going to give up being Spider-Man. I'm going to support my wife.
So maybe...
So that's coming into the
room. Maybe later
stuff.
On. Honestly, I will argue that, no, Spider-Man is not a coming-of-age story with the Lee Ditko stuff.
See, I think it's there, and they lean into it more as they go through the
Romita
stuff.
If it is there, they're not aware enough about it to make us aware of it.
I'd go back. I think there's a bit of it in Amazing Fantasy 15, very definitely.
Right.
And I think it is there because he's got a lot of responsibility on his shoulders for a kid that age. He's essentially the breadwinner. The money he brings in supports the family.
So
by definition, he's taking those steps, but emotionally he's not really ready to do it.
And I don't think that is in the book.
I think it's in the book.
I think that's a retrospective rereading. That's not in the book. He gets a job because he wants the money and he can show off now.
Mm.
And then there's bits here and there, but then that becomes an issue-by-issue trope. He's not becoming... That's not what the book's about.
Mm.
You're putting that in there in your looking back on it. It's a run-of-the-mill villain of the week thing until maybe halfway when there starts being a bit more of a story. But even then, it's not... Peter Parker's age has nothing to do with that book.
See, I think that it does. I think it's got everything to do with it.
Honestly.
I think contextually, you were looking at it, there's no other strips that were around at that time that were focused on a teenager in that way. Even Johnny Storm in the Fantastic Four, he's just a bit of a knob.
But I can't see, and especially because I remember it being in the book when I was reading the Romita pocket.
It very definitely becomes more in the Romita stuff.
Which is why I'm surprised going back into it. I just don't know. I don't
see
it.
But he's saying it's never been a part of it.
Right.
Whereas I think certainly through issue 99... which I have argued many times should be where it stops.
Right.
Issue 99 should be the last issue of Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Because in that issue, he makes firm commitments to, I'm not going to be Spider-Man as much. I'm going to focus on my studies. He goes to the Bugle and demands a job.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be freelance anymore. He wants steady money.
Yeah.
He's looking at what he's going to apply for when he leaves college.
Right.
And the unfortunate thing is Stan leaves with the next issue and then that's forgot.
Right, okay.
And within 6 months, he's back being a freelancer and they're back spinning the wheels.
Yeah.
And if I was going to do Spider-Man, if I was given carte blanche, keys to the kingdom, do what you want, I would go back to 99 and go from there and use all of that as the springboard for where I was going forward.
Isn't that similar to just what Spider-Girl was?
Yes.
Just, yeah.
Because ultimately, that's where I would be headed.
Right.
But I don't know that I'd kill Gwen.
Right.
I don't think I'd kill Gwen Stacy. See, to me, that's the easy way out. You didn't like that character, so kill her. But no, you're the writer. It's your job to make the characters interesting.
But also, how much of Spider-Man is the death of Gwen as much as it is the death of Uncle Ben?
It is now.
Yeah.
But again, it'd be interesting if you carried on reading it. Gwen's death fades into the background a lot.
Mm.
Like, she doesn't get mentioned a lot in Ween, Wolfman.
Yeah.
Denny O'Neill, Roger Stern. Every now and again, when he gets a new girlfriend, he'll just go, Gwen, and he'll remember her and what right. we could have been.
Okay.
And then he moves on.
Yeah.
Because she's dead. There's nothing he can do about
yeah.
it. Because this was before there were thousands of clones running around, and before Spider-Gwen and
yeah.
Ghost Spider and all that stuff.
Well, there's been a bit of a renaissance and retcon of importance. Like, Mary Jane is now super important and is the one
yeah.
true love. Gwen Stacy is now this really important character, and it's like, well... Yeah, but no, then they yeah. haven't been for a long time. So why are we now convincing ourselves that that was always the case?
And this is the point that I disagree fundamentally. I think coming of age does become a part of it and is.
Become
and
a
always
part.
Was. I think it's there in the Ditko ones.
Mm.
Honestly, I do. I read it as that. Maybe I'm bringing to it retrospectively. But I think it's there. the very fact that he is aging, which again was new at the time.
Right.
Superman didn't age. The Flash didn't age. Yeah. Robin wasn't aging. Robin was perpetually 14.
Yeah. I think it's just more the case of he doesn't age. He just ages.
Mm.
Or he doesn't...
All of a sudden he's graduating high school.
Yeah, I get
that criticism. Where was his prom?
Yeah.
Where was the lead up to graduation? It's like there's a year's worth of stories missing.
And I very much feel like the entirety of that Ditko run is the pair of them, Lee and Ditko, working out what the book is.
Mm.
And I think, unfortunately, Ditko leaves
after he's nails it.
They nail it. Yeah.
Which is a shame, but it is what it is. But anyway, to go back to the letters page, he says in this letters page, Spider-Man should be universally relatable, and he's come to believe that Spider-Man growing, aging, and developing isn't the way to go. Fine. Okay. Right. If that's Marvel's line. Now, I think, as you know, I think Peter's at his best in between 15 and 20.
Mm.
I think that's where you can focus on his uniqueness. I think that's where the drama is much more relatable for people. The girlfriends, the jobs, the college, the studying,
yeah.
Balancing all that is not easy. But I don't think this era is universally relatable.
Right.
Largely because the problems Peter has been undergoing haven't been universally relatable at all.
Yeah.
There's been a few issues about him dating other people, or the girls have come in, that's fun. But the MJ Paul situation just hangs a pall over it. Like you've always got, but he's going to get back together with Mary Jane, right?
Yeah.
That's there all the time. But they are together through cosmic forces. You know, I can't remember exactly what it was because it's a while I read it, but like Philadelphia blew up or something, which caused this riff in space-time, which meant that Mary Jane is with Paul. She was living in this alternate universe for a certain amount of time.
Is that what killed off Ms. Marvel?
Something
as well,
like that. They've merged. No, Ms. Marvel was later. They've got this relationship. They've come out. She's suddenly got these kids. And none of that's relatable. I mean, yeah. I don't know about you. Maybe your girlfriend fell through a space-time warp at some point.
Yeah, she's not mentioned it.
And not mentioned it, but yeah. We've all had our roommates date gang lords. and the daughters cause us to be threatened and almost killed. And we've all been bailed out of trouble by our mates, She-Hulk and Luke Cage.
Yeah.
And this is all Peter Parker stuff.
Right, yeah.
Not Spider-Man stuff. Now, you can argue that Peter's roommate dating one of his villains' daughters is a quintessentially Spider-Man.
It's very Spider-Man, yeah.
But it's informing the Spider-Man stuff more than the Peter Parker stuff.
Yeah.
And that's my problem with that. I don't think everything's been that relatable. We've not seen Peter Parker worry about rent as we get through the cost of greed crisis.
Mm.
We've not seen him whine at all that £5 coffees are an acceptable thing. We've not seen grocery shopping affecting his ability to buy web fluid or make web fluid.
Yeah.
That's a quick Peter Parker issue. Well, do I buy food this week or do I make more web fluid? If I buy food this week, there's stuff to be mined from having to get on the bus.
Yeah.
And him sat there bored out of his tree when he could be bouncing from rooftop to rooftop. His roommate eating all his food that he buys. That's relatable stuff. We haven't seen Peter directly involved in anything not directly involving Spider-Man for years. And one of the key points of the strip, again, let's see if you agree, Peter hated when Spider-Man encroached on his Peter Parker life.
Oh, yeah. There's
he loathes that.
There's been loads of times throughout this run where there's a big deal made about the number of costumes he has.
Yeah.
There's like a bunch of issues where he has to wear a crappy Halloween costume one. There's a very much kind of, they hinder each other and he hates it.
Yeah, if Spider-Man wins, Peter Parker has to lose.
And
if Peter Parker gets a win, Spider-Man has to lose.
Yeah.
This run has been nothing but cross-pollination.
Yeah.
And you want to make this relatable, I think you give Peter a life away from the superheroics again.
Mm.
You focus on that for a long time. You rebuild his supporting cast. You have him whine that he never sees him because he's too busy.
Yeah.
That's relatable. Yeah. You don't see your friends because you've got other stuff to do.
Yeah.
Let's see him struggle to balance the Spider-Man stuff and the Peter Parker stuff. Go back to having question why he's even Spider-Man at all at this point, because I can't see why he's even bothering at this point. Bring back cash-strapped Peter. Back to, not due to his money mismanagement, because of life.
Yeah.
Everything is now much more expensive. How's he affording everything anymore? You want him relatable, giving relatable problems, not this bollocks about MJ being with this bloke because Cleveland fell in a wormhole.
I think Spider-Man is the perfect example, and a lot of people point towards him as the biggest problem with comics. Is you're very limited to what you can do with them. He's constant sliding timeline. Mm-hmm. He's, what, 70 years old, really, kind of thing?
Yeah, but now he wasn't bitten by the radioactive spider till post 9/11.
So, yeah. So, like you said, he works best in high school and college, mm-hmm. or alternatively, having been allowed to grow up. And they're the only two ways that you can do.
Yeah, neither the Spider-Girl series is great. Yeah,
but they can't do or won't do either of those options. Nope. The single best version of Spider-Man is Invincible.
Yeah, well, they allowed it to carry on and then end it.
And I don't know if it's because I've always been a few years younger than Mark Grayson that I've always found him more relatable, but he goes to college, he has these problems, he grows up, he has to get a job, and then suddenly he's got... It's more relatable because he's allowed to grow, and it benefits from having a beginning, middle to end. Unfortunately, because it's Marvel and one of the biggest flagship titles, you can't do that. You can't end it. No. You can't age him. You can't do anything with him that isn't just, well, let's rewind and then go and then let's rewind.
I would argue he's now at the same point that Spider-Man was in the 50s and 60s. Superman, sorry, was in the 50s and 60s.
Right.
It's just a perpetual retelling of the same kinds of stories, but the audience isn't turning over anymore.
Yeah.
So you can't get away with it as much.
Have you seen... I have not seen it properly yet, but the series finale of The Simpsons that they just did.
No, or I wouldn't mind watching it.
By all accounts, it's the best it's been in a long time.
It's the opening episode of a new season, and people were like, is it ended?
So, yeah, the premise of it is...
And Conan O'Brien hosts it, doesn't he?
Yeah. They've got an AI to do the last ever episode of The Simpsons, and so it brings back a lot of tropes, like they parody The Sopranos, and all sorts of things, season finales. But Bart turns 11 and it breaks the fabric of the show and just completely destroys it. And it's fascinating because that is essentially...
Yeah, because he's been 10 for 35 years.
but that's with Spider-Man as well. Yeah. He's trapped. It's trapped. The characters are trapped, which must be a fate worse than death to just be trapped.
Yeah, because it's a weird thing as well, because Captain America can be Captain America and just live in this perpetual cycle forever.
Because he was in ice.
So can Iron Man.
Yeah.
The Bruce Banner can be trying to find a cure for the Hulk forever. But there's just something about Peter Parker that makes you feel, actually, he should be changing and evolving. And
yeah.
Because when he started, he wasn't 34. And he wasn't like Matt Murdock. He already had his job as a lawyer. And...
But also, Peter Parker is... And the life and problems of Peter Parker is in the DNA of that book. It has to at least be prominent in it.
Yeah. And even if they do introduce him with new girlfriends, he's not going to go anywhere with them.
Yeah.
He's not going to marry them.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they do with him at this point. Brand New Day, as enjoyable as Brand New Day was overall, broke it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go back further and say the Clone Saga broke it. Because it was after the Clone Saga, they did not know what to do. And I'll mention more of the Clone Saga next time, because I just read a bit where they came up with an ending that is dumb as dirt, but could have worked. Right, okay. And we'll talk about that next time. I also read Batman Dark Age, but there isn't one this month, because the last issue has been delayed until November.
All right.
Which is a shame, because that's a really good book, and I'm very much enjoying it. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed our State of the Union address.
Yeah, it was an off...
Yeah, it was good that. We've got one email. Should we do it?
Let's do it.
Let's get the third and final email out of the way. Oh, because it's Mike. So we can't not do that. Yeah. Michael Bailey has emailed in Catwoman and Other Things. Gents, Eclipso the Darkness was in was the summer annual thing from 1992. You remember I mentioned Eclipso having the diamond on the cover?
Yes.
The diamond was indeed the bane of collectors, especially those that didn't both bag and board their books. That would be me. So he just left that imprint in the book in front of it. And if you pulled it out wrong, it ripped it.
Of course.
It was stupid. It was pretty damn stupid. Me and Mike in agreement once again. As a long-time listener, I find Michael's breakdowns at the beginning of the main feature comforting. Both Andy and Michael have very good exposition voices. It's not an easy thing to do, making information sound interesting, and on top of that, not sound like you're standing in front of the class reading your book report. And both of you do this very, very well, and it makes me interested in what y'all are talking about. So that was History of Vertigo bit was fantastic. Similarly, this was a great synthesis of the old show and the new one. You talked about Spider-Man and Batman, staples of the original series, but doing not only new books, that are off the beaten path, but in a new way that you do your analysis. This may seem like a weird compliment, but I appreciated what you did, even if you didn't mean to do it. Oh, we totally meant to do it. This story sounded interesting. If it pops up on Comixology, I will be picking up. Cheers, Mikey might be in the house. Excellent. Good. Thank you, Michael. We're glad you're enjoying it, and we're glad you're enjoying our new approach.
Yes.
Which is the only way you can do it. You can't go backwards, can you?
You can't go back.
Unlike Peter Parker.
You can't be a Peter Parker.
We're not living in a perpetual static motion.
Sometimes you've just got to have your 11th birthday.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, very good. We'll be back next time with Dragon Ball.
Actually, this time, promise.
We're not kidding this time. We will be back with Dragon Ball. See you next time. Bye-bye. Hey Kids Comics is a The Devil Will Make Work for Idle Hands to Do production and hosted by Andrew and Michael Leyland. All opinions expressed in the show are the opinions of the hosts and no one else. The free-to-use music that closes and opens the show was the sci-fi cyberpunk trailer by somebody called Stringer Bell on the Pixabay.com free-to-use website. Thank you very much to him. If you would like to support the show, you can buy Michael and I, or both of us, or one of us, a coffee. Go to ko-fi.com, that's ko-fi.com/A Leyland. In 1 month, an all-new episode of Hey Kids Comics, coming in your ears. It's a date.